Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 10 Reasons You Feel Old and Get Fat is the title of the book we're talking about today. Great title. With Dr. Frank Lipman. He's the New York Times bestselling author of The New Health Rules, which is a great little book. He also has an excellent website at www.bewell.com. He has a very successful practice here in New York, and he appears regularly throughout the print and visual media. And so we're talking about, we covered pretty much the subject of diet in terms of, you know, some of the things that undermine people's health and accelerate their aging process. You also talk, of course, about exercise. And you have some interesting things to say about exercise, because you make the statement that exercise is not just about strength and stamina. So, you know, if it's not just about strength and stamina, what is it about? Because that's what people, I think most people think exercise is for.
Right. Well, first of all, I try to get people to think about movement rather than exercise. So you just need to move your body, which I think is important. So you don't necessarily have to go to the gym. It's just about movement. But I think that the two areas of exercise that people don't or forget about is, you know, one or more and more people are thinking about is, you know, core strength, especially as you get older, the core, and I am guilty of this too. People forget about strengthening their core, and as you get older, if you want to maintain your balance and stay healthy, having a strong core is really important. So doing some balancing, that's why just generally getting people to move, doing unusual things, you know, brushing their teeth on one leg, doing things to strengthen your balance is very important. And then the other part, which I'm a huge proponent of, is, you know, we can call it stretching, but it's like freeing up the fascia. You know, we have this tissue that runs throughout our body. You know, when you cut open a chicken and you have that thin layer of fascia that's over some of the muscles, but we have this fascia running throughout our body. It connects us from head to toe. And, you know, being an acupuncturist over the years, I've seen so many people come in and they have really a tightened fascia, and it may present as joint pain, it may present as all sorts of pain, but a lot of times it's just this tissue that's tightened up, and you need to free up that tight tissue. And, you know, one way is some body work, another way is acupuncture, and to keep it loose and free, stretching is really important. That's part of the reason why I'm such a big proponent of yoga, because there are not that many other things that actually free up the fascia and stretch the fascia and the muscles as well as yoga. So I think that, you know, let's just call it stretching for lack of another term, but keeping your fascia free and stretching, I think, is really essential. And especially as we get older, you know, that will prevent you from, you know, getting back pains. And a lot of back pain I see is from tight fascia, whether it's in the hip or the legs. And when you free that up, the back pain gets better, because if the fascia is tight and the muscles aren't firing properly, there's more load for the back muscles to work harder. And if you can free up the hip and the legs, often the back pain gets better, because the back muscles don't have to do the job that the hip muscles and the leg muscles are doing. So I think freeing up the fascia, stretching, is really important, especially as we get older.
I think that's very well said, because, you know, as you know, I do a radio program, and so many people call up with very, very debilitating back problems. And I don't do so much physical medicine. I used to do acupuncture. I'm mostly doing nutrition these days. But my answer to them is, gee, I sure wish that we had undertaken for you a program of preventive medicine for your back by building a strong infrastructure and making sure that you're limber and flexible before you develop these, you know, horrible disc problems or spinal stenosis, because those problems are very, very intractable. You know, they're very, very challenging. And yes, we can do a surgical fix, but, you know, it's always an incomplete fix. And I wish that one of the things I wish they did more in even in primary education, you know, they teach kids reading, writing, arithmetic, and maybe they should put them on a yoga mat and get them to stretch, do some things to strengthen their core.
Right. And I think part of the problem is the way we see the body in Western medicine If you've got a back problem, you go to the back doctor. You've got a neck, you know, everything is, you go to that, wherever you, the problem is, you go to that particular doctor. And so often with musculoskeletal problems, the problem is actually somewhere else, or you need to treat other parts, you need to treat the whole chain. Back problems usually don't start in the back. Mm-hmm. They're often related to the hips or
yes.
knees or the way you're walking or whatever. So, I mean, I think it's made worse by a whole way of thinking in Western medicine. You go to the back doctor, and if that back doctor is not looking at other parts of the body, there's no way it's going to correct.
Indeed. And there is, of course, an impact of diet, because as people improve their diets, sometimes that stiffness and achiness and soreness dissipates, because
yep.
there's such a thing as a pro-inflammatory diet, and sometimes a few weeks on a program like the Revitalize program, people notice that they feel less stiff. They wake up, they feel more mobile in the morning. There's less oohs and ahs, and you know that whole morning
exactly.
Groaning routine.
Right. So as I tell my patients, there's usually a systemic or metabolic issue as well. So you've got to treat it locally and, you know, treat the chain, but there's usually a metabolic systemic problem as well, and you need to address the nutrition. So they all work together.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about stress, and you make another provocative statement in that chapter. You say that stress is perhaps not primarily a psychological problem. So how could it not be a psychological problem? You know, you got an annoying boss or a complaining spouse, and so stress can be not psychological?
Sure, we don't realize the physical stresses that we have to deal with on a daily basis. So let's just go back to what we were talking about earlier. If your posture is not good, if you've injured your ankle and you adjust the way you walk, that's going to be a stress on your system, and your body's going to have to adjust, and different muscles are going to have to work harder to compensate. If you're eating sugar or foods that you're sensitive to, that's going to be a stress on your system. Now, sugar alone is going to create an insulin response, which is going to affect your cortisol. That's a stress on your system. If you're not sleeping properly, that's a stress on your system. If you're exposed to too many chemicals, that's a stress on your system. So that all these factors are, you know, trying to encourage people to see them as stressors. They're going to stress your system just as much as an unhappy marriage or a boss that's giving you a hard time. So all these factors will stress your system, and you need to deal with all of them. You know, it's that spider web. Whatever we talk about, they're usually multifactorial issues, and you need to address all of them. So it's not just about nutrition. It's about how you're sleeping, how you're seeing the world, how you're dealing with the world, how you're eating. Do you have community? Do you have meaning in your life? All these factors play a part in our health. And so, you know, the book is really about, you know, trying to open people's eyes up. You know, it's not that difficult. You make small changes here and there, it can make a big difference to your health.
People, of course, want a prescription, news you can use, and you list four key supplements that you particularly like, and then seven supportive supplements that are, you know, perhaps less central but all play a supportive role for most people. Do you want to touch upon those, please?
Sure. You know, supplements are tricky because I think everyone's a little bit different, and, you know, targeting supplements to people's needs is important. But, you know, why say the four key ones, probably maybe even five because magnesium is in. But what I say is most people are vitamin D deficient, so they need vitamin D. Most people are omega-3 fatty acid deficient, so, you know, I recommend a fish oil or krill oil or omega-3 fatty acids. Most people need a probiotic just because of, you know, our microbiome being such a problem, just because of the food, etc. So, you know, probiotics are tricky because, once again, everyone's gut's different. But I think most people need a vitamin D, fish oil, and probiotic. And then I think a multivitamin is important for most people, just because we're not getting the nutrients that we need to function optimally in our food, just because the food travels for long distances. Even if you're eating an organic, perfect organic diet, you know, if food travels long distances, if it's been stored, it's going to lose some nutrients. The soil it's grown in is not as rich in nutrients as before. So we're not getting the same amount of nutrients we got from our food as we did 50, 60 years ago. And at the same time, there are more stresses that we have to deal with in our lives, and the more toxins that we're exposed to. So our needs are greater. We're not getting enough in the food. So I think everyone should probably take, you know, even if it's an insurance policy, a good multivitamin. So those would be the four main supplements I talk about. A good multivitamin.
The hallmark of a good multi, you know, because you do specify certain things in a multi, because there's so many multis, they're just rampant with multis. But you specify that they should have methylated B vitamins, because that's more, better delivery system.
Exactly. And we're seeing more and more people with this genetic mutation, the MTHFR gene mutation. And what I see in my practice is when, you know, sometimes we measure it, sometimes we don't. We probably should measure it on everyone. It's one of those few genetic markers we can measure in New York now. But a lot of people have these mutations where they're not methylating properly, and then they take a B12 or a folic acid that's not methylated, and it can create problems. So I really recommend, if you are going to take a multivitamin, if you are going to take B12, just see that it's methylcyanocobalamin, methylated B12, methylated folic acid. I think the methylation, one of the things that I'm seeing over the, you know, as I become more aware of it, is methylation issues seem to be a problem with quite a few people. So that's why I recommend a multivitamin that has methylated B12 and folic acid in it.
Any other favorites on the supplement front?
Well, I'm a huge, huge fan of glutathione. In the old days, the only way we could get the glutathione was intravenously. Mm-hmm. But now they're making, you know, glutathione where it's actually absorbed orally. So I love glutathione. I'm a big fan of magnesium. I think, once again, I probably should have had five basic nutrients, not four. I think most people are deficient in magnesium too. So I recommend magnesium, especially at nighttime for a lot of people. It calms them down. But magnesium is another common nutrient. I'm also a big fan of alpha-lipoic acid for a number of reasons, for its anti-aging capacity, but also because it can help some, you know, sugar metabolism. And a lot of people have carbohydrate metabolism issues. Sometimes the alpha-lipoic acid can help them with that too. It's a wonderful antioxidant, and then coenzyme Q10 is one of those nutrients that I'm a huge fan of as well. So, and there are one or two others, but those are the big ones.
I don't want you to give away the secret sauce of your detox formula, but what are some of the favorite herbs that you like for adjusting the microbiome, combating the overgrowth of harmful intestinal microbes, candida, and so on?
Right, so the beauty, I mean, of the cleanse actually is, I think, is this the herbal formula, antimicrobial formula that I actually have in the cleanse. And, you know, it's a mixture of sweet wormwood extract, artemisia. It has some berberine. So I think berberine, artemisia, grapefruit seed extract, barberry extract. I mean, those are the key ingredients, I think. I mean, it also has tribulus in it, has bearberry in too, but I think the artemisia, and it also has black walnut extract in too, but I think the grapefruit seed extract, the berberine, I'm a huge fan of berberine for a number of reasons, including
blood sugar regulator.
So berberine, artemisia, and grapefruit seed extract, I love all three of those individually. So they're all in the formula. It's black walnut. So so if you're going to look for a formula, look for something that has the wormwood extract or the artemisia in, something that has berberine, grapefruit seed extract, and black walnut extract. I mean, those are probably the big ones. I mean, there's so many good formulas out there now. You know, the good companies are making good formulas. people seem to respond really well to these herbs. And I just think so many people have this low-grade microbiome that's off balance, and that has to do with so many people take proton pump inhibitors, which can, you know, affect the microbial diversity. Mm. So many people eat factory farm meats and dairy products, which have antibiotics in, which kill the good bacteria. Genetically modified foods, actually, you know, they're sprayed with glyphosate. Glyphosate is a registered antibiotic. So you're eating antibiotic-sprayed food. So there's so many factors that disrupt our microbiome that I've become a huge fan. And most patients now, I'm actually starting them off on giving them this antimicrobial formula and some probiotics to try create some balance.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, among the 10 themes that you hone in on in terms of things that promote aging and overweight, the medications we take, you single out medications as a prime reason that people get old and fat. How does that work? By what means does that?
Well, I think different ones work by different mechanisms. But we're so quick to give medications, and most of the time, you know, the metaphor I use all the time: if you're driving your car and the oil light goes on, you don't put a Band-Aid over the oil light. You know, you take it to the mechanic. He looks under the hood to see why the oil light went on. A lot of the medications we take are just Band-Aids. You know, they're just Band-Aids over this oil light. They're just suppressing the symptoms. And then what happens is they suppress the symptom, and the symptom pops up somewhere else. So you end up playing whack-a-mole, and you're knocking the symptom with one drug here and then another drug somewhere else. And people end up on a number of drugs, and these drugs are not benign. You know, I talked about the proton pump inhibitors, which people take like candy. Those aren't benign drugs. They disrupt your microbiome. They inhibit absorption of a number of nutrients. Every week, every month, there's a new study out showing kidney disease, heart disease. I mean, it's endless. So statin drugs are given out like candy, and statin drugs have side effects, and they're not particularly effective too. So I think we've got to rethink the way we give drugs in this culture. It's not a healthy way of dealing with the body, and it's causing these secondary problems. And so I do think that when people start taking drugs, especially when they start taking them for a long time, it creates all sorts of metabolic problems in the body and makes us old and fat.
Right. Sometimes I think they should create a subspecialty in medicine called iatrogenology, which is the study of the, and they should have iatrogenology specialists, well, like you and I, who take people and wean them off medications.
Yep. So, yeah, I had to put that in there because so many, I'm sure you see the same thing, so many of the problems I see, first of all, people not addressing the underlying problem, just taking a drug, but then the problems that the drugs create, you know, by themselves. So, you know, people have this double whammy, and I get so frustrated because it's so obviously wrong, and they're not getting it. What I say to people all the time, when you grow up in South Africa during apartheid, and you looking around and you know it's so obviously wrong, and people are just living as if it's normal, but you know it's so obviously wrong. And I feel the same way about the medical system here. I'm looking around, I'm saying, these are smart doctors.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on? It's not that I'm a genius. This is just common sense. You know, why can't they see that this is not good in the long term?
Well, it's interesting, your passion for social justice and your perspective from your South African experience has translated to a passion for some sort of medical sanity here in America, where I think
exactly.
We lead the world in medical excess. So
thank you for well articulated. Thanks. Yes, thanks. Well,
indeed. And while I'm articulating, now you got me speaking Swahili because finally, we got to talk about
Khoza, not Swahili. Khoza.
Okay, I'm sorry. Khoza, which is Swahili, another dialect, but Khoza would be the South African lingo. Ubuntu. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Ubuntu. So Ubuntu is basically compassion, community, all rolled in one. It means what makes us human is the humanity we show each other. I am because you are. So it's all, you know, it's really about community and compassion. And then I sort of added in the chapter, you know, passion and meaning, and I sort of rolled it all into one, and I called it Ubuntu. But Ubuntu means, you know, really means what makes us human is the humanity we show each other. And I think community is so important. I think we've lost that a lot, especially in New York. I think community is healing. You know, there are lots of studies showing when people age in isolation, they don't do as well. So having a community, and a community that thinks the same as you, that you feel you're part of, having meaning in one's life, whether it's your children or your job or working for a nonprofit, can be anything, but meaning is important. And feeling passionate about something, passion also makes you feel young. So all these, you know, non-tangible aspects of our existence are really important in our health, and we don't really see it that way. But I think community, having meaning in one's life, and passion, feeling passionate about something, and there's so many ways you can do it, and I talk about that in the book, is so important. And I think I see that a lot with women, especially when they bring up their kids, and their kids have left home, mm-hmm. and now they have nothing. You know, they put all their energy into, you know, getting their kids to be real good people, and work is not meaningful to them anymore, and they feel like they don't have anything. So mm-hmm. I see that a lot. So just, you know, finding the right community, finding something that turns you on. And so I'm a big believer in helping people discover those parts of themselves which will really help them age better.
Indeed, because without that kind of coherence, you can do all the physical things. You can take a million supplements, be on a great diet, exercise like crazy, but your spiritual core is not going to hold things together
exactly.
for you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, okay. So that's a very comprehensive walkthrough. The 10 reasons you feel old and get fat, and how you can stay young, slim, and happy. And it's a great book. It's full of nuggets of practical information and a call to action for people who want to turn things around. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? You've got a website. Of course, we talked about the book. What will people find if they go to bewell.com?
Well, I have a newsletter that comes out every week. We put up blogs 4 times a week.
It's a beautiful newsletter.
Yeah,
it's got great recipes, great ideas, practical information.
Yep. So I try to, you know, just as you are doing, Ron, we're all doing it in our own way. We're trying to get people to, you know, practice intelligent medicine. You know, you call it intelligent medicine. I think it's a great term. I just think it's good medicine. You know, how do we turn more and more people onto common sense medicine, to use Western medicine for crisis care when it's appropriate, but seek other ways of helping yourself, empower people to take care of their own health. This is the future. This is what we need to turn more and more people onto.
Indeed. And you are truly a pioneer in that effort. And congratulations on
your
wonderful
books. As
are
you, and thank you for all the work you do, Ron.
Well, it's my pleasure. So, 10 Reasons You Feel Old and Get Fat, get the book, read it, apply it, and I think you'll see some real tangible benefits. Thank you so much, Dr. Frank Lipman, for joining us today.
Thanks, Ron. Absolute pleasure.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.